Author of the Week on Radio Gorgeous.
The Museum of You is the story of Darren, who is a dad in his 30s, and his daughter Clover. And I suppose it's a story, it's an origin story. So Clover wants to know about her beginnings, and Darren has a sort of very carefully rehearsed version of that story that she has heard since she was small, but she is 12 now and that story's not enough and she'd like to know the details. And upstairs in their house are some of her mother's belongings, and she decides that during a particular summer holiday she's going to arrange them and sort of display them and make a little museum, and that's what she does, and she tries to put the story together herself.
Because we all do crave a creation myth.
Mm.
As people, as cultures, as societies, individuals, we all want to know where we came from.
Yeah, definitely. And even those of us who sort of have a lovely story about our beginnings, the people who've told it to us have, even inadvertently, edited it and honed it and remembered it in a particular way, and so we can never know the whole story. And Clover has some sort of bigger gaps in hers than most people, perhaps.
And in that absence, she fills it out.
Yeah, with varying degrees of success.
Yes. And that was interesting because we are not our stuff.
No.
And she has a random collection of stuff that may or may not even be her mother's.
Yeah, yeah.
And she creates this, like a myth of her mother in the absence of the information. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and it's, what was interesting to me, as a relationship, and you're a mother, and I'm a mother, and you can see, as a parent, how you could be so close to someone, and they're so close, and yet so distant from each other as well.
Yeah, there's a thing with childhood, isn't there, where you sort of, there's a time when you sort of try and protect your children from reality, and then as they get a little bit older, you know, it's your job to sort of introduce them to it and, you know, make sure they're aware of it, and they're sort of in that stage, I suppose. Mm.
Yeah, because it is also a coming of age story.
Yeah.
For Clover, it definitely is. And it's beautiful. And Clover is lovely. As is Darren. And his hindrances feel very real. And it's sort of this sort of unwitting and unintentional lie of loving.
Yes. Yeah. I think I'm sort of interested in that, actually. The I suppose the ways that good people do bad things. I'm not that interested in like writing about, you know, evil and psychopaths, or sort of interested in writing about really well-intentioned people who like do really stupid things. Yeah.
Well, and that's probably most of the damage that gets done in the world is well-intentioned misfirings. But yeah, it's funny because they're so busy. Like, instead of talking, they're so busy sort of covering up and covering for each other. And they're so close. They're so close. They could almost be there, you know?
Yeah.
And I wonder, those moments in all of our lives when we could be bolder.
Yeah, I think so. I think I was thinking when I first started writing the novel that I was going to write about a mother and a daughter. And then I heard some interviews on the radio with some single dads and recognized so much of what they were saying was actually like just there wasn't like a gendered difference in the parenting feelings or anything, you know, their feelings for their children were the same as my feelings for my children, and but there were some interesting things that were happening in their actual lived experience of being a parent. So there was a dad whose wife had died shortly after giving birth, really unexpectedly. And it was a family member actually, said to him, what are you going to do with the baby? Because the assumption was that, you know, as a man, of course he can't look after a baby. And he was so offended and mortified, as you would be. And it was sort of a coincidence that I kept hearing these like various interviews, and I just thought, yeah, actually, I'm going to write about Dad because I think that might be a bit interesting. Yeah.
Yes, and he does have all the syndrome I recognize as a parent, the inadequacies, and, yeah. you know, insecurities, and overcompensating, self-questioning, boredom,
yeah.
anger, you know, all of yeah. those things that any parent experiences. And mortifying thing is that your parents felt that way about you.
Yeah. That's true.
Lest we forget.
That's true.
We were all babies. Yep. Even yep. Mrs. McIntyre, the lovely next door neighbor.
Yeah, it's Mrs. Mackerel.
Mrs. Mackerel, sorry. Sorry about that. Tell me about that character, because she's hilarious.
I wanted to write about somebody who gets things wrong, you know, like words wrong. And my maternal grandmother she was a teacher, and she used to keep a little book of things that people had said that were wrong, and she'd written them down. And so when she died, I had this little book, and I just thought that it would be really fun to have a character in the novel who did that. My grandmother was a school teacher, and the head teacher at the school where she taught used to do it all the time. And like my favourite one of his things that's in her notebook was, "There's a pair of knickers here. I've had them on my hands for a fortnight." And he would just inadvertently say, "really," or "I'm saying this with my tongue in my mouth," or just like all the time. And I noticed actually that people do it quite a lot. Just one or two, you know. One of my children told me the other day that they were twisting my leg. Or somebody said that they were being made into an escape goat, you know. And just, so I started writing them down as well. And I gave a lot of them to Mrs. Mackerel. And also football commentators do it a lot because they're thinking so fast. They get their words jumbled. So there's a few things that Mrs. Mackerel says that actually I heard on, you know, when I was listening to football commentators. Mm. But I wanted her to be mean, which she is, and funny, but also to be kind, because I go and see my own grandmother every day, my dad's stepmom. She's still alive, and she has this sort of group of friends, and I do spend quite a bit of time with them. And yeah, they are hilarious and sharp and quite wicked at times. Mm. So yeah,
bullying. Bullying with love.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah, and so that's why
we
she's sort of the way she
a
is.
A bull in a tea shop.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That would be a good one, actually. Yeah.
It would fit her.
It would, yeah.
Radio Gorgeous.
I want to talk about one thing, was the museum in Liverpool, the Titanic Museum.
Yeah.
And there was, which Clover has visited, and she takes some of the style of her museum after that one. And at each woman she comes to, you're sort of supposed to figure out, you know, did they survive? Did they, et cetera. And so it says, "Discover my fate at the end of the exhibition." And that's one of the things we can't control or even know how we will be perceived.
No. Which is terrifying, isn't it?
And we also don't know, you know, even our children, how they will perceive us.
Yeah, and it's different, isn't it, as well, for different... Because nobody's position in the family is the same. So, like, I'm one of five, I have four children myself. So their experience of the family is different in each case as well. So there is no sort of universal truth in the perception of you as a parent.
And
it's
any
very scary.
And any family stories, like you say, they get honed over the years.
Mm.
But those are just stories. That's not lived experience.
No.
And that warps and changes over time. And oh, it's all scary and fraught. And good fodder for
exactly.
fiction.
Yeah.
You bring up a slew of things very seamlessly in the book. And one, which is, I think, in society, we have such a problem with placing denied pregnancies.
Yeah, I think denied pregnancies are really interesting. There was
even the term.
Yes, Yeah, it is. I did some reading. I've got a friend who had just finished qualifying to be a midwife. She sort of pointed me in the direction of some stuff to read. And then we had a case in the news in the town where I live, where somebody had given birth in the toilets in an amusement arcade and had just left the baby in the toilet. And she had another child with her. She'd just gone in, given birth, and left with the other child in a buggy, I think it was. And the vitriol directed at this woman was just horrendous in the online news, and I just, it was a fascinating and very sad story. Mm. And you know, I felt for her because what she must have been experiencing in order to do that. And yeah, and I just find it fascinating.
There was a story in the news in the States of a girl at her prom gave birth in the toilets, and again,
oh
went
my
back
goodness
to the prom.
Yeah. So I just sort of, and they call it a denied pregnancy, but whether the woman knew or not, I think, like, so there is that sort of ambiguity. Like sometimes people insist that they genuinely didn't know, but they still sort of put it in that bracket. I find it fascinating, and my sort of favorite sort of depiction of that is in the Stone Diaries, where the woman gives birth in the kitchen while she's making that summer, well, it's not like a summer pudding, but it's like a sort of special pudding. I can't remember the name. It's not one we have in England, actually.
Yeah,
that's Canadian
pudding.
Yeah, it is a Canadian pudding, so I don't know it. But yeah, that's an amazing description of somebody giving birth who just hasn't realised at all. Yeah.
It's because a lot of things, you know, our disconnections to our bodies as women sometimes, and also it's like the last bastion of really demonizing a woman. You know, you can't help, like, you didn't, what do you mean you didn't know? You know, it's a double damning. And that brings up, you know, postpartum depression if you weren't even prepared. You know?
Yes, of course.
You know?
Then that is just, you know, huge disruption to your life and your plans.
Yeah, it's hard enough.
It is hard enough, absolutely.
And you would know.
Yeah.
And how do you find, tell me about your writing routine with four kids.
So my children are older now. So my oldest is at university. And so it's, you know, they've, since I've sort of been a writer, I suppose they've all been at school. So I write, you know, while they're at school. And then sometimes in the evenings, or, you know, I tend to just do little, I mean, I will work for several hours and stuff, but I will do like little bits here and there as well. Just like any other job, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. Except it's a bit flexible. So if, you know, if someone needs to go to the orthodontist or something, then I can take them.
Radio Gorgeous, the place to find authors.
There's a lot of talk about mindfulness and being in the present, and they literally hunt down and entrap moments of happiness. Like these little bubbles of happiness.
I think because Darren had a very happy childhood, and because there didn't appear to him, at least, to be any effort went into it, he just was happy. His parents were happy, and he doesn't feel like he knows how to replicate that, or he knows it's important to replicate it, but he's worried about it. And you know, how to engineer it, how to make it happen, and so he sort of overdoes it quite a bit at times, and sort of has this I suppose it's like a Boy Scout mentality, a sort of be prepared, like he's prepared for any eventuality, and that's why there are so many things in the house, because he might just need them one day.
Yeah. What is that hoarding? My husband has it. I mean, I you know, he would probably argue that I have it as well. I'm like, oh, I might need that, and I might need that.
It's very strange, isn't it? Mm. We went up in our loft the other week, and just were like, some of the boxes up here have been here for 12 years since we moved into the house, and we haven't opened them. Do we really need this stuff? And we did throw some stuff away, but there was some stuff that we hadn't looked at for 12 years, and we were like, oh no, we definitely must keep that.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can picture there's a box in my sister's attic, which was the house we grew up in, like over 3,000 miles away from here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see exactly what's inside that box. I'm like, nope, don't throw it out.
Yeah.
Well, I've moved away, you know, that. 20 something years. I'm like, nah, I can, yeah, no, it's good. I still need that sweater.
Yeah.
I can't possibly wear it. I can't, as you know.
It's strange, yeah. Isn't it? I'm like that with books. So, like, no, I might read that one day.
Mm-hmm.
And probably won't, but there are, you know,
I've always wanted to read
many
that.
Books.
I always
yeah.
wanted to be the person who had read that.
Yeah.
Or I want to be the person who likes poetry, you know. So I'm going to keep that. For that idea of me, it holds the idea of me.
Yeah. Mm. Actually, that's interesting because, yeah, there are things, aren't there, that we keep because they're sort of aspirational. In that way.
Notions of ourselves.
Yeah.
Possibilities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my life, and I give it all to you.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com. And it's written down.